Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Adventures in Movies, where we talk about the Indian genre films you've never heard of, the ones you can't hear enough about, and the ones you never want to hear about again. My name is Nathaniel Mir, and I'm the movie editor at AIPT. Joining me on these ongoing adventures is the host who hates Candyman, but loves Randy Man.
Ooh, I do love a good Randy Man. Sorry, I am Danny.
Also joining us is the host whose heart won't beat unless someone tells it to.
Damn right. Damn right. I wasn't here for that, but my name's Blake. Super great movie. Movie of the year.
I figured.
Quick, Blake, what's your top five movies?
Oh, shit. I don't know. That one.
I figured you would say that one. So at the end of the show, I was like, well, I'm going to name this movie because I know Blake would have said it.
So. I'm glad you did. Yeah.
had to throw it out there. School just started here again. I know I never complain about this place, but fucking there's this road that leads out to when I have to go to work. They've had a month and a half to like shut it down and do whatever work they have to do on it there. They just started on it over the weekend. Fucking idiot. So now the other road that I have to go down, there's this huge pothole on it, which is why I never go down that road. Thankfully, they worked on the pothole.
Turns out
they fixed the road all around it, but left the pothole. Like, and I'm pretty sure they thought they fixed it. Like,
that's hilarious.
This is Aggie engineering. That's how it works here.
Damn, couldn't you get Domino's to go fill like potholes? Like, didn't they do something recently where you could like call Domino's would like go fill your potholes? So call Domino's
with their pizzas.
Yeah,
bullshit pizza.
You know, I respect Domino's because they had a few years ago they had a campaign where their commercials were literally, "Our food is good now." I appreciate the honesty.
No, that's true. Yeah. Like, to call it pizza is really not true, but whatever the product is that Domino's makes, it's not bad.
Regina always wants to go there. Never go.
She's a thin crust person?
She loves thin crust. And she always tells me, that's funny that you say that. That's what she tells me. She's like, their thin crust is good. And I'm like, why do you act like I've never tasted it before?
You know, like, our family was a huge like Pizza Hut family. And then somewhere along the lines, I dated a Domino's girl. She worked at Domino's, got a lot of free Domino's. And that kind of turned me around. But once they got the new recipe for their pizza, I was a converter. I was a believer. And I do think Pizza Hut is an inferior pizza now. But
wow.
I just picture you like walking in with your girlfriend in her Domino's outfit and the whole family like gasps.
It's like Romeo and Juliet starting over there.
They're not racist, they're just foodist.
Yeah.
They're elite.
They prefer their brands. We're a Coke family.
Pizza people, Danny.
You know, oh man, I know we're from Texas and we gotta love that this pizza. But man, I do not like Peter Piper pizza whatsoever.
Whoa, hot take.
I think like that is the last pizza I will ever
bullshit.
Like, yeah, no, and the fact that you said that you're cool with Domino's, I'm like, yeah, that's cool.
Oh man,
the best pizzas are Peter Piper, Papa John's, not so much for the pizza but because they give you a side of grease, which is
awesome. Yeah,
I love that side of grease. And a Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut, you could get beer too, but my favorite thing like post 21 was that you could go to Peter Piper Pizza and get like, it was like a large pepperoni pizza and a pitcher of beer for like $12.
Yeah,
and you could just sit there and drink your pitcher of beer without another cup and just bomb your pizza down, and life was pretty, pretty good.
Yeah. Then they jacked up the prices on the pitchers, I think, because then lots of kids are there and stuff.
Yeah, because I was fucking drinking four of them at a time. They were like $3.50, man.
They realized that this family place where there's birthday parties everywhere, we probably should have a bunch of drunk Mexican dudes.
All these guys wearing Pantera and Slayer shirts. We got to get them out of here.
Well, we took Kitty to her first Peter Piper experience not that long ago, and She likes it, you know?
Yeah, of course she does.
Yeah, I mean,
well, she's also a baby. She's also a baby and she doesn't know better.
So one of Regina's friends, you met Adrian Blake, remember the...
Adrian's cool.
We went to Peter Piper once for the lunch buffet, and he's always hitting on girls all the time. So this girl calls him, and he's like, we're about to eat the buffet or whatever, and he's like... It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm about to go into a business meeting right now. Right when he says that over the loudspeaker, and a very special Peter Piper birthday to you, Beverly. I gotta go.
That's actually perfect.
Yeah, I was like, dude, you played yourself.
I gotta meet a very important man about some cheese and pepperoni.
Come on over. That's important.
A very Peter Piper birthday. It'd have been better if it was for him.
To Adrian.
Oh man, that would have been hilarious. So there's actually some movie news this week.
Bullshit.
Kind of some bullshit. Kind of some. Daniel Radcliffe of Harry Potter fame is going to be playing Weird Al Yankovic. What do you guys think of this casting decision?
Oh man, I want to say it's perfect.
Really?
I mean, kinda, yeah, because I feel like Weird Al would want that. He'd want it to be like a pick you would not have anticipated. Like everybody would have thought, like, oh, it's Paul Rudd, or so, you know. Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. No, let's get Harry Potter himself. I think it's perfect. I think it's gonna be super weird. I think Daniel Radcliffe likes this weird shit, no pun intended.
I really do think that. I think it's like, if this was just being like, hey, Weird Al wants to make a movie about his life and he's considering you, I feel like Daniel Radcliffe was like, let's get on it, you know. I feel like it's gonna it's gonna be played super seriously in the most weird way.
I think that it's gonna be like super over the top. Like I don't think they're gonna play it very serious. Like I think that Daniel Radcliffe is like, well, like kind of like Blake's saying, like he's this kind of a pretty boy, so the exact opposite of Weird Al. So in a sense, it's the perfect casting for it. The interviews they gave for it, they're kind of funny. Some of the dudes are trying way too hard, but like Weird Al said that something to the effect of he made his last movie. His last movie was UHF, and that came out in whatever, 1987. He said at that time he swore to his fans that he would make a movie every 33 years. So now he's ready. True to his word, he's going to release his next movie. And then it's going to be done by the Roku channel, which I didn't even know they did original stuff. And then Funny
Or Die. Yeah, I didn't know either.
Funny or Die has a couple of good things. They have this movie called The Vice Guide to Bigfoot, which is kind of funny. And the guy who did Scare Me, Josh Rubin with Aya Cash.
Oh, yeah,
he was part of Funny or Die. So I won't write it off for just because of that. But Roku channel, I don't know. I shouldn't judge, but I'm kind of like, man, why isn't it on Netflix?
Or something
Netflix
that nobody's going to watch it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Kind of like UHF.
Yeah, exactly.
That being said, UHF is hilarious.
I do love Who Wants to Drink from the Fire
Hose? They were also saying that it's the true, not exaggerated story of Weird Al, like stuff like that where you're kind of like, okay, we get the joke. Like,
I fully anticipate this being like Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny levels of absurdity, and it totally should be, and I'm okay with
Yeah, absolutely. It should be kind of like his music.
So absurdist. Highly entertaining. Yeah.
Also, I wanted to be like the VH1 Behind the Music Weird Al, where they talk about his quote unquote beef with Julio.
Yeah.
That was classic.
That was really good.
I do hope they touch on his parents dying of carbon monoxide poisoning, which is very sad.
It being on Rosa, do you guys think it'll be funny? Like,
I think I think it's gonna be totally tongue in cheek the entire time. And I anticipate this kind of being some of these like cult classic-y kind of vibes kind of things.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I didn't recognize any, aside from Weird Al and Daniel Radcliffe, I didn't recognize any of the other names, but you know, that's just kind of like, you like to attach yourself to something that's familiar, you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
And that's not in it, but that doesn't mean it's going to not be fun, but I'm looking for, no release date, but I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Cool.
Another movie coming out, and this has no details whatsoever, and actually it's just rumored, but Bong Joon-ho, who directed Parasite and Snowpiercer, Memories of Murder, apparently he's in talks with Robert Pattinson for their next movies. Would you be interested in seeing a collaboration between these two?
Oh yeah, I mean, these are two of my favorite guys going right now in Hollywood, quote unquote. Always interested to see what old Bong is up to, and you know, Robert Pattinson's, he's grown on me as just a guy. When I see his name on the marquee, you know, it makes me go, oh shit. I mean, I'll check that out. So, yeah, apparently it's based off a novel is from what I'm reading, but,
Oh yeah. Really? That's cool. So what yeah. Snowpiercer kind of was, and Memories of Murder was also, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Edward Ashton, Mickey Seven is what they're saying.
This is. Yeah. And it's not even a book that's even out yet.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so the book will be published in the first quarter of 2022 by St. Martin.
Okay.
Just what Pat was saying, just based on experiences and adaptations, this might go a completely different route from like Snowpiercer, and but it's still adapted, you know, from a book. But I like the synopsis to this. Mickey Seven is an expandable, a disposable employee on a human expedition set to colonize an ice world, Niflheim. I think that's in Final Fantasy VII, by the way. Whenever there's a mission that's too dangerous, even suicidal, the crew turns to Mickey. So I feel like, did you ever play Killer 7 on the GameCube or PlayStation 2? This guy had multiple personalities, and each personality that you got to play with got to like gave you different abilities and like I guess power-ups. And this sounds something similar to that. To answer your question, Pat, now reading the synopsis, knowing Robert Pattinson's, I guess, like what is be like his performance, like I'm kind of down for this, because if it goes in a route where it's just completely like, again, obscure or abstract in a way, or more abstract than obscure, I think I would like to see this from, especially like from Bong Joon, because I feel like he has a really good, again, we were talking about last week about like storytelling. He just knows, or yeah, for Bell, I just feel like he also knows how to like write a really good story that will just take you on this crazy adventure.
Absolutely. And Robert Pattinson's actually had a very interesting career, because with Twilight way back in the day, it was, you know, really easy to write him off. And then he started doing all these, you know, indie films, aside from the 9/11 twist movie. But he did all these indie films, and you kind of got to see like, wow, this guy's, you know, a really good actor. And then people stopped calling him for parts because they just were like, well, he doesn't do anything. So he had to take on the Batman. Not that he had anything against it. But he took on the Batman so he can get his name back out there again. But he still, it looks like he's still going to do the parts that he really wants to do, which is cool, because
he has the power.
And it turns out he's a really good actor, too. So
yeah,
that's the best part of it. Hopefully he doesn't go the Nicolas Cage route, because Nick Cage used to do that also, where he would do one indie film, one blockbuster, and then...
I hope he totally goes the Nicolas Cage.
Of course, Nicolas Cage. It took him a while to find himself. But for a while, we were getting like that Wicker Man remake and stuff like that. It took him a while. Now, like, he's doing like amazing stuff. Like,
where's my pig?
The Sundance Film Festival has already started. Actually, for those of you who are listening to this, it's all virtual this year. And it's running through January the 30th. Obviously, there's going to be movies there. They're known for documentaries. There's also a bunch of short films that are going to be there. And we're going to be looking at one of them this week. Guaya is the story of a woman whose grandmother has just passed away. And she's trying to move on with her life, but she's having a little bit of difficulty with that. Guaya. Okay, well, I guess we'll start with, like, as horror movies go, well, horror movies, and I don't know, maybe you guys will disagree with this or not. I would say that part of the charm is how straightforward they can be as compared to other movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's also why some people will dismiss them so easily. So this is so obviously in a short movie, there's even less time, so things are going to be even more straightforward. Do you feel that this was a little more nuanced than your typical horror movie?
Man, that is a loaded question, I think. yes, I would say that's, yes, it's more nuanced, but I'm not sure if it played to its favor.
And that was going to be my second. So being that it's nuanced, is it a good idea to do that in this format?
Tough. 15 minutes, not a lot of time.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Danny.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's a lot of time to it to be this nuanced. I do feel like David Byrne, Burning Down the House, I feel like it was very inspired by this in a weird fucking way.
David Byrne?
By David Byrne, yeah. I know that I could get my Davids mixed up, but I do feel like Talking Heads, David Byrne, had to have some sort of weird influence on this person.
Okay, so explain that.
the thing, this is, I feel like the last 5 minutes of the movie is where it gets its my comment on that. I feel
it's
like
when the virtual movie, insanity stuff.
Yeah. the reason why I say that is because for 10 minutes of this whole movie, you got a straightforward horror film, and where there's just this Catholic guilt, essentially, you get a pretty good story, and then it gives you this weird left turn, right? And, you know, if we talk about horror films, we usually know that, with the exception of not being an A24 film, like, they kind of telegraph their moves once in a while. And then this one just goes into this Talking Heads route.
I still don't get the Talking Heads reference.
Can we spoil this? I don't want to spoil this.
Like, well, she's a flamenco dancer.
She's a flamenco dancer. I don't know. I feel like it's just like the surrealistic take on death. And I guess that's how I see that. This is how I see the Talking Heads, is this very surrealistic music. They're her, I guess, grieving is with this dance montage.
Well, here's how I took it. I don't think it was a sudden left turn. I think it was a very straightforward story. It's the five stages of grief, straight up. So you kind of knew what the ending was going to be, I thought. Not necessarily did I think it was going to be a montage, but it's because I saw this movie after the next thing we saw. So I already had an idea of stages of grief or dealing with death or whatever the case may be. So this is laid out in chapters. So when I saw each chapter, it was like, well, obviously the first, you know, two chapters, I didn't know what it was. But by the time everything was said and done, I was like, oh, like each chapter was a stage of grief till you get to the end where it's acceptance. So I didn't think it was surrealistic, or I didn't think it was a sudden change. Now, I do think that's a very nuanced story to tell in a 15-minute span, because what you're getting are really quick hits. And I think what's happening is you can't really get a feel for everything that's going on. Like, she could have been, I don't know if she was cursed or if she was, like you mentioned, guilt, because obviously that plays a factor in it. But to what level was she guilt? And why did she feel it so heavily? So things like I think there's a really good nugget of a story. There's a really good story in there. And I love the idea of it going through the stages of grief, because that's what I took out of it. But I just don't think in 15 minutes, it's enough time to effectively give that story over. But what do you think? Like, was it like kind of a weird turn at the end, or?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how I feel about this little thing. I did think it was not I mean, it wasn't so straightforward that it, you know, just spoon feeds you every little thing. I think there is
right.
some nuance to it for sure. As far as the ending goes, well, I didn't expect it to end the way it did. And I guess I thought that it almost sold it short, because I actually thought the acting and performances were really great. And then it's kind of just evolves into this one thing. Is it artistic? Heck yeah. this is definitely some artistic filmmaking. Effective? I don't know. I think that's debatable.
So I think we might all be on the same page, actually. Do you guys think it would have been better served if it were longer?
I definitely think so. Yeah,
I think so. Give it another hour and 20 minutes to give it that hour and a half runtime. Explore the characters. Explore that nun chapter, because I thought that was you explained it really well, Pat. Like, it did explain, it gave you some really good tidbits, but not enough to it left. I guess this is what the short should do, right? Wanting more, or give you a good story. And yeah. I feel like this is one of those few times that I do want a story to be expanded on.
Yeah, and it isn't, you bring up a really good point. It is important to remember from, like, we're audience members, we're watching it for our enjoyment, but from a more logistic point of view, like, the whole reason for a short is to show off your talents and to make an actual movie. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So, and then that, you know, takes budget and equipment and, you know, how much time you have with mm-hmm. all that stuff that we don't really care or know about is taken in. So, if this were like a normal 90 minute horror movie, then yeah, you can like you said, the nun scene, everything dealing with their past, like their connection to each other, like anything would be great, because mm-hmm. all I know is her abuela has passed and she wasn't there for it, but I don't know like how long was she not there for and what kind of connection did they have, and like, yeah. Since that wasn't there, it kind of loses all of the emotional connection. And by not having that knowledge of their past, like, the ending still would have come out of nowhere to me, and it probably, I might not have been 100% cool with it, but at least I would have understood it a little bit more.
Yeah, and I thought it was almost a risky choice to, basically leave your movie, you know, with our interpretive dance scene. Just because I don't think I didn't really feel any closure with it at all. I mean, like you said, maybe that's the entire point. Left me wanting more for sure.
Yeah, and now ultimately that might have been the entire point of this. So it's a short, so it's just a very short review we have on this. So Guaya, right now showing at the Sundance Film Festival, you can buy a ticket for it online to see it. See or no see? I'll start with Danny.
I like shorts. I do think this is a good 15 minutes to watch. And then, you know, put on either a little bit of Dramara Quiet or Talking Heads, you know.
And then, in all fairness, great. If you do buy a ticket, it won't just be for this one. You will get the whole short.
No, program. Yeah, you get, yeah.
And what about you, Blake? See or no see, Quia?
Boy, how much is the ticket?
yeah, I guess so.
It's like $20 for like 10 shorts, so it's kind of
okay. Well, you know, that's good. I think the performances were strong enough, and there was enough of a nugget of a cool idea there that if you're gonna pay $20 and get some shorts in, definitely make this one of them.
Yeah, I've seen some awful shorts, and you hate to say that because it's just someone who's really just putting their work out there and saying, you know, give me a chance. This one's actually pretty good. Yeah, the ending, it's not the most satisfying or even satisfying at all. It definitely needs to be filled out in the middle. But, I mean, it's interesting for sure. Man, poor choice in music, though. Films, documentaries, shorts, and also indie episodics is a section at Sundance. This is what it sounds like. Creators go with pilots of shows for streaming networks. They're going to put them on display there for people to see and hopefully to get a distributor. Bring on the Dancing Horses is a little bit different in that it actually filmed all 10 episodes of its run. Wow. We got to see the pilot for it. Unfortunately for some, It has nothing to do with Echo and the Bunny Man. So if you want to hear Bring On the Dancing Horses, you still have to see Pretty in Pink or buy the album. But what it is about is a female assassin who is kind of working on her list, it looks like, and trying to dish out some justice. So this is billed as a modern Western. Blake, I know you're a fan of Westerns. And a few months back, we talked about how now this isn't a horses and wagons type of a Western, but
no.
Did this give you the feel of a Western?
It did. I thought for what little they were working with, they did a pretty good job of expressing that kind of Western feel. I thought it was pretty accurate.
What about you, Danny? Did you get that feeling also?
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was very modern in a comic booky way. Like, I really liked the tone of it. Everything just felt good. Like, if it felt not like a natural progression of where we're at, I guess, like in our timeline to this. So I did think it was a good representation of a modern Western.
It definitely gave the feel of one for sure. I did like, and I don't know if you're thinking meant the same thing, but like in regards to time, it kind of had a feel of timelessness. Like, mm-hmm. although obviously there were some mentions to music that were very obviously from a certain era, but you really couldn't place it aside from, yeah, there was cars there, but I mean, it could have been 1985 or it could have been 95, could have, well, maybe not 75, but I mean, like, it was, I liked that feeling of, and it was like any town USA. I enjoyed
desolate kind of feel to the townships, you know, which I always think is kind of cool. Yeah.
And then you have the characters that they're not oddball per se, but they're the type that you would see in a Western.
I mean, when this says Western, I think it's very much of the Cormac McCarthy feel and vibe. So if you're familiar with his writing or how he portrayed the Southwest and Western states, it very, I mean, as soon as it started, I was like, ah, this is very Cormac.
And what did you guys think of the character? Now, I don't believe they named Kate Bosworth plays the main character. I don't believe she's named.
I don't believe so either.
I don't think they gave her a name.
So she's most definitely like the character we spend. Oh, she's Frances of Assisi.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. They are trying to figure out her name. So we have Frances of Assisi. What did you think of her character?
Interesting portrayal. I mean, I tend to like these. Getting back to some real great, you know, Western tropes, the el hombre sin nombre, the man with no name. This is kind of the same thing. She's kind of the woman with no name. And and she's almost even got this almost androgynous look where she's like tucked her hair up in her hat. I thought it was a very interesting character. And I think what you're given a little bit is some glimpses into her past and as to how she got to where she is. And I mean, I found the character intriguing.
I like the character a lot too, though I will say I thought she was a little too wordy at times.
yeah. Read too much Ayn Rand, that's for sure.
Yes, very much. So you mentioned like there was glimpses into the past. So, okay, so here's some, and this isn't an issue that I have with the show, but I didn't know if that was her past or if it was happening parallel to what was going on. And just so you guys, I mean, we're not going to spoil anything. I mean, we've only seen one episode, right. But we will give away some plot points for this. So I think there's, like you mentioned, there's scenes of a child and I think it's her. I agree with you. I think they are flashbacks, but I don't know. At times I was wondering, like, is this something else happening somewhere else and it's running parallel to what's going on? And I didn't like that feeling, to be honest. I wish it was more like there was more of a delineation between, yes, this is a flashback or this is somewhere else. Because I don't understand what the point of there possibly being a mystery, or maybe they did spell it out. I was just too dumb to pick it up.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Oh, man. I thought, you know, like going back to like the comic book thing, I did think it was happening parallel, but also telling Kate Bosworth's story in a weird, random way. Anytime that we went back and forth, in my head, I'm seeing two panels going, like we're seeing scenes, and they did it obviously in on the show too, but I saw a full page of all this going on. So I really did think it was a parallel, like another story happening, but it was still her story. I know it makes no sense whatsoever. And doesn't.
No, it does. It does. She's like when they eventually do meet, if they are in the same time, it's kind of like, you remind me of me when I was your age.
Sure.
Yeah. I really like that. I really did like that story, that storytelling for this first episode.
It was, you know, like I guess we'll kind of get to it later, whether we want, if we have the chance, if we would want to see more of it. But yeah, I kind of was uncomfortable with not knowing exactly what was going on. Like, even if they went to the same place or something, like I do believe they were flashbacks. I do believe that, but I just wish I knew for sure.
Yeah, they'd really just have to put a date, year it's happening in at the bottom of the thing.
Even if one of them goes to a place after the other has been there and we see some remnants or something, but
yeah.
You know who did this? This is us. This is us did this. Where there is,
I've never seen it, but I've seen This Is Gus, the Psych 3 movie, which is pretty funny. What did you guys think of the pace of bringing on the dancing horses?
Interesting pace. Moved along pretty clippy, at a fast clip, I would say. Maybe too fast.
You know what? It was over. Like, so here's brutally honest review. Like, in the very beginning, I was kind of bored. Like the whole thing with the guy who reminded me of Dom DeLuise.
You mean Vito?
Anything,
from The Sopranos?
Yeah, anything with that dude, I just was not into. And I was just like, I just wanted it to move past it. But
his eyeballs, man. I fucking hated his eyeballs.
Not dig it.
Too many close-ups of his fat face.
I'm watching The Sopranos right now, and I'm in his arc right now where he's being outed and finding love. So to me, I'm like, oh,
because I'm not. What's his character's name? Fat Pussy? Was that Big Fat Pussy?
Vito.
Vito in the show, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I feel like, oh, he gets killed by Keith Bosworth. That's great for him.
Yeah, and they tried to make it like with Kate Bosworth's commentary, and then he has like a sex doll and stuff, and they tried to make it funny, but it didn't really work for me. Now once they got past that, I was like all in, and it did move too fast. Like, it was over before I was ready for it to be over. It also has a pretty poor ending. If you're watching it in a vacuum, like if there's more coming, then it's, well, we can talk about that. But the pace, I thought was really weird. Like, started off really slow and kind of boring to me, but once it picked up, I was into it. And then it was moving kind of too quickly for me. Yeah. Were you guys surprised by, so the song, the name is, I don't know if it's based on the Echo and the Bunnymen song, but it's an Echo in the Bunnymen song. And then in the beginning there, she's going through the jukebox and it lists off like a whole shit ton of songs. But music, it is a part of this. It's kind of important, but I thought it was really more of an afterthought than anything else. Mm-hmm. And that kind of surprised me.
Yeah, it kind of threw off the whole, I don't know how to judge this thing too much, because it felt like it was made shoestring budget. Not that that's a bad thing. They did a great job. It was lacking like some, I don't know how to put it, like some panache, some feeling that a good score would provide. And it was definitely missing that.
It may be that we're like, for sure, obviously the filming, like photography part is done. It may be that they haven't finished like the complete editing of it.
That's true.
Possibly. I don't know. Like, because it seems like music should be very important to this, but then there are scenes where they're listening to the radio, or she turns up the radio at one point and they're listening to, and the song, it's kind of cool when they're listening to the music, you can kind of get into it. But I just kept thinking, like, I wish there was more of it, like to underscore emotional scenes. Or there's a dude being choked out by a pair of panties. Like, it just seemed like an awesome, it just seemed like there should have been an Eric Clapton song playing at that point.
Motley Crue,
Gary Glitter.
You know, you guys talking about like it's missing something. And I guess it is that score, because throughout, I think the whole episode, it is kind of quiet, and then when it does play, Where Is My Mind, it's just like, oh, it comes, it's kind of out of nowhere, and
it's kind of cool too. Like, it just seems like there should be more of it. Like, and some things do overdo it. Maybe that's what they were trying to avoid, and they really wanted to punctuate the parts that did have music, but I think they could have used a little bit more. So Frances of Assisi, she is an assassin, and there are some deaths in here, of course. So what did you think of the death scenes in this?
They're okay. I mean, they were like kind of off camera, gory blood splatters, right? That's always, it's always kind of enjoyable. But
yeah, brains on the walls.
Yeah, brains all over the place. You know, I feel like this is wanting to have a real kind of dark, gritty, you know, probably shown on like Showtime or HBO kind of vibes. I don't know. I almost want more out of the gore and stuff. You know, like if we're gonna be that gritty and dark and stuff, like let's really do it.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I would say too. Like, not go all crazy with it. No. Like, but like there's a part where she executes somebody, and the blood all over the walls. It's pretty. But I think there should have been a little more of that. Maybe one or two more scenes of it, because you get the feeling that she's a badass. Yeah. Really. I mean, she's super calm. She's has this like dry sense of humor. She's really willing to like, she like fucks with her targets. Like, not, I mean, she messes around with them. So it's like, she's cool. Like, I could really get behind the character. I just wish they showed her being more of a badass.
Yeah. Get Robert Rodriguez in on the next few episodes.
That's all right. No kidding. So, Blake, I'll start with you with this one. Bring on the dancing horses. We've seen one episode of it. If and when we're able to see more episodes of it, would you continue to watch it?
I would. I thought it was an interesting premise. You don't see too many badass Western female assassins. So, I would sign up for more of this if I could.
And Danny, what about you? Bring on the dancing horses. Would you be willing to check out the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think I will. I that's that first episode did leave with a pretty terrible cliffhanger. So I was like, I wanted kinda, more.
You kind of need to see the rest of it.
Yeah. It's kind of, you're only getting one issue of a comic book and that's it. You don't know when the next it's going to come out. So it kind of does suck a little bit. But yeah, I do think you should watch this.
The way this ends, like, for sure you need to see the next episode. I'm not all in on like committing myself to a full season, but I can see myself getting caught up in a full, depending on where the story goes from here. But I would definitely check out the next episode to see what the hell happened at the end. Riotsville, USA is a documentary that focuses on the late 60s in the United States. At the time, there was a lot of turmoil, lots of racial division. People were very politicized. Sounds a little familiar. And this documentary is about that time. So this documentary takes an interesting, I think it goes in an interesting direction. All the footage is from that time period. So it's from like 67, 68. No current interviews whatsoever. There is a little, there's some voiceovers, but there's no actual interviews from modern day. So what did you think of it? I mean, do you think this was well, obviously it was aesthetic, but do you think it added to the documentary or did it hurt it?
That's a great question. I don't know. This, watching this is like, it was like eye-opening and not eye-opening at the same time. Cause it's like, oh boy, look how little things have changed. Other than people smoking cigarettes on live TV, which I thought was so cool, but
that's always cool.
Yes, always cool. It could have maybe used a little modern touch because this literally felt like I was in junior high and they wheeled in a TV projection and I put this thing on and be like, well, kids, we're going to teach you about the civil rights movement today, and that's the way I felt about it. I mean, was it bad? No. Was it very timely? No. Not in its presentation. No.
I would totally agree with you because it does sound like it's going to be really topical and really interesting because you're like, oh, civil rights. And I think, and I know last year people, I mean, especially with what happened at the Capitol, where I guess I was,
oh sure,
yeah, people were like, oh, we're so close to civil war. I wasn't around during the late 60s, But from what I've read and what I've seen, and even documentaries like this, it seems to me that that was the time that we were closest to civil war, aside from the obvious civil war. I look back and I see things like this, and I don't know how this country came out of it without having a war. I can only imagine, because there wasn't someone who could bring people together. Plus there was Vietnam going on, and there just wasn't the resources to it. But I agree with you. Like, yeah, the movie, it deals with topical subjects, and in a sense it's timely, but it just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't click on all cylinders. Like, for some reason, I wasn't as invested in it as I probably should have been.
I agree.
So I was super invested that first half of the movie. I was really into it, thinking, like, oh, I did not know that they would do anything like this. Oh, it seems very familiar. Oh, we haven't changed. I do like your metaphor of, like, how, or not your your realization that World War or Civil War Part 2 would have happened in the 60s. And I haven't, yeah, you're right. I have no idea how we came out more, like, how we came out of it. But for sure, we came out more racist. We went back, like, a couple of, you know, steps back in progression. But, you know, like, speaking with this movie, I do think it loses its half. It loses itself in the second half of this whole film. Like, I think when it hits, I think after the snipers or the sniper talk or the janitorial riots, I was kind of a little bit, and I had my headphones on and I treated it like a podcast. That's why there was a conversation that we had before we started recording, and I was walking around trying to get everything ready for the show, and I was just treating it like a you know, historical podcast. And it is educational. If you don't want to learn about a lot of this, this is hard.
and just to explain the title of it. So back in the 60s, late 60s, there was like the Watts riots, and there was riots in Detroit and Newark, just throughout the country. The Kent University one, that's, you know, very famous one. What the U.S. government or the U.S. Army, what they did was they built little model towns, and they called them Riotsvilles. And what they would do is they would have military training there, and they would invite police departments to come and train how to handle any civil unrest, is how they put it. So that's why it's called Riotsville, USA. That is actually kind of an interesting topic, and they don't really go anywhere with it.
Well, their storytelling was rough, because it almost feels like they try to tell you the same full story twice, and so by the time you're going through it again, it starts to lose, like, its luster pretty quick, I would say.
Yeah, there was a part, so, and I shouldn't say that I was watching this like completely detached, because there's some parts where I was like, oh wow, that's crazy. Like,
yeah,
they're talking about how the U.S. was using tear gas in Vietnam, and other countries were like, oh no, that's not right, you shouldn't be doing that, that's inhumane. And the U.S.'s answer was, oh yeah, we use it on our own citizens.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're like, oh shit, that's pretty great. That's fucked up, you know? And then they're showing these staged riots, and people are applauding to it, and they're watching it, and it's, and then you see, you know, like, the police funding is a big issue right now. You see that LBJ, one of the things, or the only thing he did as a part of an act that had a number of things on it, was he increased police funding. So that kind of goes back to what's going on today. And some of that stuff you see and you're like, wow, that's interesting. But like, there's this, the last 20 minutes or so of them are all about Dade County. And every time there's an election, you hear Dade County. Every 4 years, I hear about Dade County. Oh, yeah. Only time I hear about Dade County. So I don't know if 1968 was the first time it ever became a big thing, but that whole thing was so boring to me.
No, totally.
But it just was not a good way to end it at all. And some of it seemed like conjecture, which is like the worst possible thing. Like, yeah. I felt that was the moment where they really wanted, like, the audience to, like, really be emotionally invested and really be like, oh wow, this country has been so messed up for half a century now.
Yeah.
And it just totally lost me.
Yeah, it asked, this thing asked a lot of its audience member with the way it was presented, to like not grab your phone and start looking at other stuff, because there's like long periods of like nothing, not even words on the screen. And then they'll put words on the screen, and then you're like, oh shit, I guess I should have been paying attention that whole time, I guess.
And then there's a part where, again, going back, it's at the Republican convention in Miami, and then they're talking about how city officials are meeting with the Black community, and there's a part where there's no audio, or the audio has been lost, and they make it a point to put it on there, but it's like, well, why would you show that to me?
Exactly.
Because all I see are, you know, people moving their lips, and it's kind of like, is this a production issue? Did you purposely turn it down? Like,
yeah, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, are you doing this for effect for something? Like, and then they tell you, they put words on there saying the record sound recording has been lost. Okay.
That why really, have it on?
Exactly. And this is not a short documentary as it is. So this is just, you know, it's only like, I don't know, a minute, but still it's a minute of time that's wasted. So, and Blake, you mentioned that it probably should have been, it would have been helped with some current interviews. I think that would have added a lot more context to it. There are some voiceovers in it, though. Like, they're kind of like almost chapter breaks. I thought the person who did the voiceovers sounded incredibly bored and like they couldn't even be bothered.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the presentation of the whole thing, man, it's like if you gave this to like a classroom full of even I would say freshmen and college students, nobody would pay attention to it or nobody would care because there's no reason to. They don't give you, there's no carrot on the end of the stick in any way. And yeah, the narrator is lackluster. Everything about it just, it doesn't, it's not an enjoyable experience to watch really at all.
So Riotsville, USA, Danny, I will start with you. C or no C?
I feel like throughout this whole thing, I did enjoy it. My enjoyment started really high and it started going really, really low. Towards the end of it, I didn't really care for it. It did, however, pique my interest that the government did kill MLK. Now I'm subscribed to that conspiracy. You know what? If you're a history buff and you want to know more about what the government tried to do or is doing, I definitely would say check this out. For everybody else, use it as a podcast. But yeah, definitely check out.
And what about you, Blake? Riotsville, USA, C or no C?
I would pass on this. I don't think I could recommend it. I found it really boring. I found it just like lackluster. For such an important topic, I think it did a real poor job of expressing what it needed to. To kind of say what going off what Danny's saying, like I'm sure there's some great podcasts out here available that dive into all this same stuff in a much more entertaining way. And so no, I would say pass.
It's such an interesting topic. Like just the Riotsville ideas that alone, it's an interesting thing that they were doing there. And yeah, there's the timeliness of it. And you can kind of trace back things that we talk about today that were even being done back then. But even if you're a history buff, like this is just, this won't make you feel anything. It doesn't teach you anything at all. I don't think there's kind of a wow moment here or there, but it's not a wow, I didn't know that. It's a wow, that's messed up. And then you'll kind of, then you'll go back to sleep. Oh, I would pass on Riotsville, USA. Every Saturday, you can find us here. We're a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcasting Network, where there's a whole bunch of horror scene podcasts, including us every once in a while. We also have an open review policy. If you have any ideas for anything that you would like us to watch, send it our way.
You could follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Adventures in Movies. You could also find Nathaniel, our first COVID baby of the year, at Nathan Portace. You could also find me, the original COVID baby, over on Twitter and Instagram at default_player. And then our most recent COVID baby, Blake, on Twitter at Four-Eyed Horror.
This baby new year coming in with COVID, love it. Next week, more Sundancing. Got a whole lot more stuff to check out, so please tune in to that.
And you can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can go to Spotify. We're also a part of Amazon Music, where they now have podcasts. Or you can go to Morbidly Beautiful, wherever you listen to us. Make sure to give us a rating or just tell a friend to listen. And And that's our cue. We will talk to you next week.
TV killed a radio star.
Burning down the house.